Welcome to episode 297 of In Touch by iOS, the show that talks about iPhone, iPad, Apple Watch, Apple TV, and related technologies. I'm your host, Dave Ginsburg, and my guest this week is Jill. How are you doing, Jill?
Well, so glad you're here. Oh, thanks for having me.
Oh, always enjoy having you on the show. Appreciate it. As well as Ben Rathick is here. How are you doing, Ben?
I am doing fantastic, Dave.
I'm glad to hear that. And last but certainly not least, Mr. Jeff Gamut is here. Not too much snow in his area, but how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Excuse me. And yeah, compared to everywhere around me, not much snow.
Yes, that is true. First thing I'll do is our topics this week. And beta, there is no beta. iOS 17.4 is the current version. We talked about it plenty last week and listened to the show last week's show about a lot of the details. Anybody have anything that stands out since we've had it for a good long week or 2 weeks here that 17.4 does that we didn't talk about last week?
I don't think there's much for us here.
How have you been? You did not go on beta, right? You just updated like a normal cycle, Jill?
That's right, yeah. So I got off the beta bandwagon, but I look at the review notes and there's not much there for us. It seems like a lot of fixes here and there. 17.4 was great.
But yeah.
And the one is.
Besides, like I talked about the Apple Podcast app with the transcriptions, which I'm absolutely loving. That was a big thing. So yeah, there's not much else to say about that. But Apple is preparing for an update, 17.4.1. That didn't take too long here. And they seem to appear to be working on it because there was some evidence in the software update and Mac Rumors says this. It's in their website logs this week. The logs have revealed the existence of several iOS 17 versions before Apple released them, ranging from 17.0.3 to 17.3.1. So I would go under the assumption that .1 update is not going to be much of a difference, I would think, other than bug fixes and such. I haven't heard much else. Ben, have you heard anything else on this update? I didn't find anything else.
I haven't heard much, but I'm not particularly surprised. iOS 17.4 came out the day it did because it had to. Why the rest of the related operating systems came out like a few days later. There's probably some stuff they just didn't get around to and have to clean up post-release.
It took quite a while for them to get 17.4 out, so that's for sure. Jeff, Jill, do you have anything else?
Not to the beta. Like I said, 17.4 was pretty great, but the beta looks a lot of EU stuff, and
Well, not much that affects us here in the United States, but it's going to be interesting to see what the next beta is. Is it going to be 17.5? I mean, who knows? I would go under that assumption, but so far we got nothing. The people who like to be on beta all the time, you're going to go through withdrawal for a little bit here, at least for a week anyway. So the go ahead and move on to some of the other topics this week. I want to talk about subscriptions. Subscriptions, with apps. Now, it's always been a controversy. A lot of people don't like paying for subscriptions on a specific app. I think many of us here do partake in that, and I think it's worthwhile in some cases. Mm-hmm. A good example is we love Set App and pay for that for Mac because that gives you a great catalog of apps and for not a big price difference here, but there has been some reports that subscriptions for iOS have been failing to make more than $1,000 a month. The report that was surrounding this, it was provided from in-depth data across 2023, was showing how most struggled to make enough to even get by. This was a report from Revenue Cat called "The State of Subscription Apps," that contains about 30,000 subscription apps across 290 million subscribers, and it was broken down here. So there's lots of numbers here. It's only about 17.2% of these apps will reach the $1,000 a month subscriptions, but those that do will grow more easily. And about 59% of those apps reach $1,000 a month monthly revenue, or they reach 2,500, and 60% of those will reach 5,000. So it's a range. Really, it's the app that it counts. You got to have a good product and what's something that is that someone's going to be interested as far as of the app itself and what it does. So I think this is definitely something really interesting to see that these app developers are they making ends meet? You know, what do you think, Jeff?
All right. First, keep in mind, there are a ton of apps on the App Store. So the percentages of apps that are subscription that are making $1,000 or less a month, this doesn't surprise me. And if you break it down based on the popular apps, well, the apps that a lot of people are using, that's presumably when you see the numbers going up. Yeah. So I don't expect a lot of the developers are making money hand over fist on the App Store. But then again, a lot of those apps that are in that lower end, they're there to just try and get whatever they can, and it's not going to be much, and that's how it is. Here's the other side of it. Are people having subscription fatigue? And on one hand, I say yes, and on the other hand, I feel like there has been a consumer resistance to subscriptions for basically since that really took off. But, you know, a lot of the people that are complaining about, well, I never want to pay for a subscription, they're the same people that want to pay $3 for an app and have perpetual updates for the rest of eternity and never have to pay a penny more. And that is not a viable business model for developers. So pick the apps that you need to use, subscribe to those, and then push those up into that category where the developers are making a few $1,000s a month or more, yeah, because they deserve it.
No, yeah, for sure. What do you think, Ben? What's you subscribe to a number of things. I was going to give the example out. Of course, also, Jeff is the Carrot app. That's well worth every penny we pay a year for that.
Sure.
So, yeah.
What do you think, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, it's a number of factors, like Jeff said. You have too much supply when it comes to apps. You know, there's just too much out there. And Apple, honestly, doesn't give developers a whole lot of options for monetization. Yeah. I mean, it was one thing back in the old Mac days when you were able to pay for a point release. But I mean, you don't have that option in the App Store. So it's either some kind of weird in-app purchase thing, or you're doing subscriptions.
Yep. Yep. How about you, Jill? You subscribe to a fair amount of apps, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. But I also comb through them every month. Yeah. So if I subscribe to you, I am diligent about cleaning them out regularly. But I'll give you I agree with the paying thing. You have to pay people, and coming out with new versions doesn't do it. But I use Hindenburg, and that's turned into a subscription.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Now there's no brand loyalty to me, because now as soon as my subscription time is over with, I might look at Descript or I might look at something else, because now I'm not locked into something. And so I think you risk having people, you know, sold into your product once you go to subscription. They can just leave you at any month.
Right. Yeah.
Better make a good product.
And that's
how you have to make a good product.
Exactly what I said. The product's got to be good. You know, the subscription's going to only go so far. If it's a product that people aren't enjoying using, then they're going to, no, I really want to pay for this anymore. It's just kind of like subscription fatigue as well as streaming subscription fatigue. Go to deal with that as well with streaming services. So it's kind of very similar to that. So not surprised that that some developers are not making the money they need to pay their bills. So definitely gonna be interesting to see where it goes. The next topic I want to talk about is Apple TV Plus. You know, I never thought this day would be happening. I'd be talking about this, but this was a headline in Mac World that the clock is ticking and on ad free Apple TV Plus. So enjoy it while you can. And there's been advertising hires by Apple that is kind of a speculation. Again, this is speculation, trying to mimic what Netflix, Disney, and Amazon ad-supported strategy is. Because, as we know, and I know Jeff was not happy with it, with the Amazon Prime having to pay that extra $3 a month now for
No, because of
the way they did it and just said, well, hey, sorry, we're doing it. So it's another cash grab there, are they saying? Who knows? It's interesting to see that Apple would do something like this. Isn't that something, especially a service they offer, they want it to include advertising. So maybe the market's changing. So they're saying that after a land grab comes a cash grab, having to push forth quick growth by alluring users with low prices. Because, yeah, we were paying a really low price on Apple TV Plus at first, and you had a really long free trial. So notice they aren't doing that anymore. I think you get a month now if that. So, but they did recruit a couple of high-ranking TV ad execs from NBC Universal and others, and this is going to be something that's interesting to see. Where do you think Apple TV Plus is going to go with ads, Jill?
You see it coming. I mean, like you said, it's coming everywhere. There's more and more tiers coming, and as things get more and more expensive, they're looking at ways of making money. But I noticed that some of the streaming apps have it in really interesting ways. I forgot. I put it on pause, one of the channels, and there was an ad while I was on pause. And I see, now there's a non-obstructive way. It's not interfering with what I'm watching, but okay, fine. They shown it, you know, they put an ad on. And I thought, okay, there's ways of doing it where you don't annoy people. And there's ways you do it where you annoy people. And hopefully they figure out the other way.
It was Peacock. I think I noticed it does that.
Yep. That's right. Yep. But there are ways, you know, and it's going to happen.
How about you, Ben?
Yeah, this is inevitable. There's an upper limit to what people will pay. And if people aren't willing to pay for that content, someone else has to, and that's advertisers.
Yep.
You also see the fastest growing TV service in terms of monetization is Fox's Tubi, which is completely ad supported.
Right.
You know, people say with their mouths that they don't want ads. Well, they say with their actions that they don't mind them as much as paying.
Right. Makes sense. So what do you think, Jeff?
I see two things happening here. First, Apple wants to do more advertising for their product. Therefore, you need a team that understands that space so that you can do that.
Hmm.
Now, the other part of it is, how do you increase revenue by bringing in more subscribers if you can't get them to come in at the price point you have? And that is come up with the lower price point with advertising. So as Jill and Ben have said, this is something that feels kind of inevitable. It's something that we can see coming. I can see Apple doing this. And just because Apple makes money faster than we can count it, doesn't mean that they're being fiscally responsible by just throwing money at a project or a service without having a good return on that.
Right.
So, yeah, my guess is that they need to increase revenue for the service. My feeling is that because Apple is being less of a jerk about the way they treat customers than some other companies, Amazon.
yeah.
Excuse me. There was something caught in my throat and it was very bitter. I expect Apple will do the more logical thing, which is, hey, if you don't want to pay, what are they charging now? $10 a month? Or for Apple TV Plus, for $5 a month, you can get in. And there will be ads.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of people on other streaming services are doing that now. You know, Hulu and Disney. And
yeah. And Ben pointed out a very important thing, which is that while people say, I don't want ads, their actions are showing they're okay with ads.
Yeah. So.
Well, then there's the Google model where you're just going to annoy people until they pay you to stop running so many ads.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully Apple doesn't go that route.
I just don't see them. They're not the type of company would do something like that, at least from past experiences. No.
And I'd like to think that they wouldn't have me rage buying
like
Amazon Prime. Amazon. Those guys. Yeah. I mean, I was swearing as I was adding the $3 a month, no ad thing. It took like 15 minutes, half an hour into the first day of that watching.
While you're watching.
And the ads hit. And I was like, nope, not happening. Yeah. Not happening at all.
Yeah. All right. Next topic I want to talk about is, what will Apple do with AI? They said, they announced earlier this year during the last quarterly results, Tim Cook said that they're looking into what's going on with AI, and they're partaking in it because, you know, like any company, you know, you got to look closely at it. And so I work for is looking at it closely, as well as many other companies are realizing how important AI really is. And it can be scary, but it also can be very helpful too. Well, Apple it was discovered that they actually, from Bloomberg, they said that Apple is buying Darwin AI. It's ahead of a major generative AI updates that are happening with iOS 18. Again, I don't like to talk too much of the speculation of iOS 18 right now, because that's long down the road yet. We're still like 3 months away from WWDC. But they did acquire this company, and it says, Darwin AI has created the AI technology for inspecting components during the manufacturing process. It also has a focus on making smaller and more efficient AI systems. Darwin AI's website and social media accounts have been taken offline following the purchase, which is interesting. They took that right away. And dozens of former Darwin AI companies have now joined Apple's artificial intelligence division. So obviously, no brainer, this has happened. And I think Apple is doing is they're in an effort to catch up with Microsoft and Google. Those are the two big players in it. And then Microsoft with Copilot, and Google now called Gemini. That they've really gotten ahead of the game here. I mean, especially Microsoft. I'm very impressed with Copilot. I've been using it a lot at work, as well as trying to use stuff with the non-paid versions on my own too. And boy, it's some pretty impressive stuff that they do. And sitting there saying, Apple, if they want to rival Microsoft's Bing or OpenAI's ChatGPT and other offerings, they're going to need to really integrate a generative AI into the range of their products. So, especially S-Lady, where I think they're lagging way behind. Shortcuts and messages, Apple Music, all of them definitely were there. And like I said, Tim Cook said, we're going to be breaking new ground. Well, I think this is a start. I'm going to start with you, Jeff. What do you think on this?
All right. So first, the Darwin AI purchase. We're hearing about it now. Yep. And I think the reason we're hearing about it now is totally, totally controlled, manipulated by Apple, because they bought Darwin AI last year.
Oh, and I missed that.
Yeah. Well, it's a thing that you have to go hunting for to find out. So it's like late last year, and like the website going down and all the other stuff shutting off. The timing of that cannot be just by chance. So first we have that. But then the other thing is, everyone's talking about Apple needs to catch up with Microsoft and Google and OpenAI and all these other companies. And without seeing what Apple's done, I'm questioning already, are we looking at this in the right way? Because we're talking about Apple catching up and doing the thing the other guys are doing. That's not Apple's modus operandi. They go into the space doing their thing, which they perceive is going to be better for us as customers, mm-hmm. and for Apple as a company. And that's often not the same thing the other companies are doing. So now I'm really interested in seeing what happens at WWDC, because I don't think it's going to be about, is Apple catching up with these other companies that jumped on the LLM bandwagon. What is Apple really going to show us?
Yeah. How about you, Joe? Have you been dabbling in AI a little bit?
Oh, yeah. I subscribe to ChatGPT. Huh. It's been very helpful to me in all sorts of research. And I've been creating some art for my podcast. Nice. One of my podcasts that use art. And I also been using Notion AI. And so I'm really intrigued to see what Apple is going to do. If it's going to be, since this is a smaller company, improving Siri, making it so that when you ask for certain things, you get more of what you're looking for, even maybe in the search bar, you know, something like that. So maybe it is going to be quite different than what we're seeing otherwise.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
Jill, I have a question for you. Dave, I'm totally just taking over for a second. So Jill, since you're doing a lot of stuff with generative AI tools, have you started experimenting with the tools where you can run an LLM completely locally?
I use Whisper Transcription, which is an LLM that's run entirely locally, and it's fantastic.
It is absolutely fantastic. Yeah. I've been playing with some of the stuff where you can have like an LLM engine running on your computer and then download models into it and run everything completely locally just to see how that works.
And I've heard rumor that's the direction Apple's going, is local.
Yeah.
Rumor.
So. Well, okay, Apple did tell us that the new MacBook Air is the best computer for AI.
Hmm.
Why would they bother to tell us that?
Which and to go on the MacBook Air, that's talking about the M3, it just came out, right?
yes.
We just talked about this last week. I mean, there's not major differences. I have an M2. Versus an M3, and everybody telling me how crazy I would be to think about upgrading it. There's been a number of things, including the SSD being faster, and now adding this. This could be a more intriguing reason. I mean, I've got the good trade-in value on the M2. Why not at this point? You know,
but, sure.
So that's interesting to hear. I to see. I mean, as we know, other computer manufacturers are already doing that. I know Dell's doing it. You know, and their products adding it with AI as part of it, and I'm sure, and I know others are too. So that's a definite interesting comment there. So how about you, Ben? We'll wrap it up here on this one.
They talk about Apple catching up in AI. Well, Apple's the first one to actually add what are now known as AI cores to their processors. And I mean, Apple does a lot in the background because they don't see AI as a service itself. They see it as part of the computing platform. Yeah. And Apple Apple does not develop externally like other companies does. The other part about this particular company, Darwin AI, it might have, I mean, it's obviously going to have that talent for, you know, future consumer level projects, but why they bought it is right there out in the open. This is going to help with their quality control and manufacturing.
Yeah, there's another good reason to look at AI to help with that.
That's a really good point.
Yeah. And maybe Boeing can use that to do a better job with their planes, huh?
Yeah, they should have bought Darwin AI.
But I couldn't resist that one. So, good stuff on that, and more to come on AI, that's for sure. We should be talking about that more. Next topic I want to talk about real quick is the MagSafe wireless chargers. That area has just become exploded with the different options that are out there. I use one on my bedside all the time when I'm charging my iPhone. I have the Apple MagSafe charger, and it works great. I mean, I think it charges probably faster than most chargers out there. You know, when you're plugging it in, you probably get a better result charging than you do than plugging it in. So I found interesting reviews here from Macworld about the MagSafe technology. We've talked about Qi2 charging, which is the newest technology for charging. Many of the MagSafes are about 15 watts of output, which is twice as fast as a compatible 7.5 watt magnetic wireless charging, not the Qi. So the G2 is supported by iPhone 13, 14, and 15 family. So even the non-MagSafe chargers are able to charge and support those. So you got the standards. You see made for MagSafe, Apple's logo, and then the G2 logos here that shows it. So as far as certifications goes. So there's so many different ones out there you can look at. And like I said, the first one I mentioned is the Apple MagSafe charger. If you must buy Apple, I think it's a good deal. And a lot of times they have a good sale on them. I've seen them as cheap as like $25. So are you guys using, I know Ben, you are using MagSafe charging, I would assume, right? You have the iPhone 12, but.
Yeah. I have. Well, technically I'm using right now a Qi 1 charger with MagSafe magnets. Yeah. So it's only got that 7.5 watt charging. Right. But if you have an iPhone 13 or newer, there's absolutely no reason to not go out and get that new Anker charger.
Yep.
The price on that is just insane for the quality. I mean, you not only get a much larger, much longer cable.
Yeah, it's thicker too.
But the thing's thicker too. It's $22.
Yeah. Oh, well, you talked me, and you spent my money on that one. I got it probably sitting in one of my cases I should be using more, but yeah, it's a pretty good deal.
I mean, you can get both colors for the price of apples.
No, you can. You can.
One for each side of the bed.
Jeff, are you using a MagSafe charging at all?
Yeah, I have a whole mix of things depending on where I am at any given moment. And yes, some of it is MagSafe and some of it isn't. I couldn't tell. No, the only place I plug my phone into charge is in the car. And that's only because I haven't found an in-car Qi MagSafe thing that makes me happy.
Yeah.
And as soon as I do, then I'll be all over that.
There you go. How about you, Jill? Do you do MagSafe charging on your phone?
I do. I have one next to my bed, which is one of the oldest ones, and it's slow, but I'm it's just there all night, so it doesn't matter how slow it is. But I do have a fantastic car mount that fits in the Apple MagSafe charger, and it's fantastic. And I'll send it to Jeff. Jeff and I will just talk about it.
Yeah, if you have a link, share it in the show notes. We'll share it. I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, sounds good. But it's great, and that's where I have the official one because it's just that mount is so fantastic.
I hear you. So they are showing a couple other ones, and I'm actually might be tempted to buy this one. I just put it on. I just noticed here. This is a Belkin Boost Up Charge Pro Wireless Charger. I'll put a link in the show notes for all the chargers that are out there on this article. It's $29.99. It's a 15 watt charger and it has a kickstand and a really long cable. But it is more expensive than they say. It's a more expensive Apple than an Apple charger. Well, it's $30 at Amazon, so it's like pretty comparable here. So that's a 2 meter cable. That's pretty long for a cable. And 15 watts, and it comes in black or white. So, of course, those are normal colors we are expected. So, I might be buying that one just because. And we talked about the Anker charger. I have this one too. This is the Qi 2, the MagGo charging pad. And they say it's a budget charger. Yeah, you can get it for 20, like you said, $22. And that's a pretty good deal. And it's 15 watts. So, there's another one that's out there too. And there's a bunch of others. I've not heard of this brand. Well, this is only 7.5 watts. So why would you spend $36? This is by a company called ESR Halo Lock.
Oh, ESR is fantastic.
That's right. I remember ESR. Yeah. So it looks like it has an actual separate cable that plugs the cable plugs into the adapter. If I'm looking at that picture correctly, but that one's $20. So it looks like it does have a cord that plugs into it. And also has a kickstand on it too. So those are some great options there. 12th South is another one. They have the high rise, that's it though. They make great products. And then this is a 3-in-1 that'll save you some space and also charge your watch and your AirPods. And that's 15 watts, but that's a little more money. That puts you at about $150. So it'll depend on if that's something that would work for you. And you're starting to go into some of the more of the stand chargers, which are more money. And then it really is going to be dependent if it's something that you really feel that the need for. I bought an inexpensive one that wasn't a Qi charge. I think it was from Wolfie that wouldn't work properly with my case. So I threw the towel in. It's good as a stand now. So that's why I use the MagSafe charger instead. So, but yeah, there's some really good choices out there of both the MagSafe chargers and the stands. You guys have any of these stands? I don't have any of these that are listed here, but they look like some good stuff. And but again, they're pricey. They're $150. So
yeah, I have one of Anker's stands. It's the kind of origami thing where it folds up so you can do travel with it. It's not the one that's in this article.
Yeah,
but it's great because it's all in one. Lay everything flat. Have your phone up and use it in nightstand mode, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. These are great.
Yeah, there's so many others in here that you could go with. We'll definitely have links to Amazon. Many of these that we picked today in the show notes. So, and take a look at those, because yeah, I think it's definitely a way to charge your phone these days. I mean, I don't even know why I use a power cord anymore. Just bring the MagSafe with me, you know, to charge when I have to. You know, I've got a dock station for Dell, since I have to have Dell and Mac next to each other. It kills me every day when I have to do that. But that Dell has I've talked about this charger before. They have an actual docking station that has a flat surface. It's Qi charging. You can just lay your phone right into the charger when you're at your desk and be able to charge it. And for being a docking station for a computer, it works for both Mac and PC. That's another good choice too. But yeah, MagSafe charging adapters are really good. So
there's some good battery ones out there too. Yeah.
The battery MagSafes. Yep.
Mac on the top of your travel.
Did I move it? Yeah, here it is. Skosh. Here you go. I got it up there. That's the Skosh that goes right onto your iPhone.
Nice.
And it's a small little one. I'm showing it on camera here, and you probably heard the click. It does good top. You only get maybe one charge out of this if you're lucky. But hey, it's another reason to have something to carry around with you. I'm crazy. I have batteries all the time in my backpack. I have one of those. I have the MagSafe charging. So I'm one that always want to make sure I have I'm able to charge my devices when I have to. So, but yeah, those are also very good things. So, but let's go on and move on to the news for this week and talk a little bit about what's going on. This was interesting. Apple's Watch Pulse Oximetry can now be reactivated through software in 2028 with a successful appeal. Apple has been selling the Watch Series 9 and the Ultra 2 without the blood oxygen monitoring, as we know since mid-January, and we suspect that Apple is going to be able to reintroduce the pulse oximeter in models that lack it through a future software update. New information from the U.S. the CBP, Customs and Border Protection, confirms that the reactivation is indeed a possibility. As if we remember, Masimo was the one that got them banned because they were infringing on their patent, and we know all that whole story. So it's interesting to see here in the article that talks about that can go. It does expire in 2028, I guess, that patent. So that's going to be interesting to see. I would hope Apple could probably want to do this sooner than 4 years from now, but I don't know. What do you think, Ben?
I would hope they'd want to get this taken care of much sooner than that. Because right now, if you have, I will say this right now, do not buy an Apple Watch Series 9 or Ultra 2 if you need that, if you really want that blood oxygen feature, because there's no guarantee you will get that back during the lifespan of that product. There's also no guarantee you'll get that with presumably this year's models either, unless it's something completely redesigned. I've been kind of surprised the whole time they just have chosen not to deal with Masimo and taken that feature away. So honestly, what Apple's going to be doing from here on out is kind of a wild card.
Yeah. How about you, Jill? What do you think?
Yeah, I have asthma. And so every once in a while, I'm wondering, am I having a problem or am I just, you know, breathing heavily because I'm exercising or something? You know, so then I have the pulse oximeter, which I rely on to determine if I'm really having a trouble. And so I'm hoping it comes back sooner. I wonder, too, why they don't deal with Masimo, which makes me believe this is some kind of, they're so mad about it that they just won't even deal with it. But it would just seem easier to end it than it would be to continue this. So,
yeah, true. How about you, Jeff?
I don't like the headlines that any of these outlets have been using to talk about this, because what they should say, which would be more accurate, is if Apple, something the effect of Apple only has to wait 4 years and do nothing to be able to re-enable the pulse oximeter in the United States, because that's what this is about. There are two other things Apple can do where they actually take an active role in making this happen sooner. One is through the courts to get this overturned. And the second is to write software that allows the hardware to be used again, because the patent isn't about the hardware. It's about the software that enables the feature with the hardware.
Right.
So Apple could have a special US version of the software and re-enable everything. They can fight it in court and get this overturned, or they can sit on their butts and wait until 2028 and then just turn the feature back on in the US.
Or they could write an obnoxiously large check.
Right. And, okay. And see, here's the other thing. We don't know what's really going on in the background.
Yeah, it's all he said. It's all they said. They said.
Right. So, yeah, Apple could write a really big check, but I think if that was an option, it would have already happened. So who knows what's really going on behind the scenes? You know, especially with a company that can just keep putting zeros on a check until someone says yes, and it's not going to break the company. So yeah, there's something else happening here that we don't know
there
about.
Has to be.
Yeah.
There has to be. Next story here. iPhone SE fourth generation is going to be expected to depreciate heavily. Resale value trends have suggested that the iPhone SE 4 may not hold its value as well as the other Apple models. This was according to SellCell. That's SellCell. According to the report, iPhone SE models have historically been depreciating much more rapidly than the other more premium offerings. The third gen SE, which was launched in March 2022, experienced a significant drop, losing something like 42.6% within that first month of the post-launch. So, yeah, I'm not surprised at all about the fact that the SE isn't holding its value much at all. Interesting, when you resell it, you get nothing for it, but then, you know, you're going to see these resellers turn around and sell it for probably double the price. But, you know, it was intended to be a low-end model. It was nice enough that Apple is offering a low-end model, only because that's not normally their thing. But the SE tends to be a pretty good seller. What do you think, Joel?
Yeah, I was looking at the differences, and it seems like you're right. In some, they have to have a cheaper model. And in the past, the SEs used to be smaller, too. Right. And that was kind of a benefit if you didn't like the bigger phones, which my friend is always looking for something smaller. But now it's the regular size. It's missing Dynamic Island. It's missing the cameras. It's missing the crash detection, I think, too. Right. And so you think you're losing a lot by it. And maybe that's why it's not holding its value. It's just the simple smartphone at that point.
Yeah, no, that is for sure. How about you, Jeff?
I'm having issues with this.
Because it's...
And I know, I'm just like cranky tonight. Cool. So I went and checked out the article that started all of this. And...
On SellCell's website?
Yeah. No. And I'm questioning a lot of what I'm reading here. And I'm getting a heavy LLM vibe coming off of this piece.
Okay.
Just saying. And the data that they're presenting and the spin they're putting on it, which is, wow, the iPhone SE 4 is a dud on launch because we don't think it's worth very much in the resale market. It's not going to be worth as much as a Pro phone because that's not what it is. And it's a lower price point to begin with. Jill, you nailed it. But yeah, I'm just feeling, I'm just not feeling it with this piece. The iPhone SE, the new model, is not a non-starter, as the article questions. And I really feel like, there's just a lot of SEO massaging happening here to create a piece.
Yep.
I mean, do people really buy phones because of what they can trade it in for later?
Right. And I mean, of course, there are some people that will take that into account, but no, that's not why people buy phones.
Yep. How about you, Ben?
We're going to be seeing something a little bit different with the SE4. Than in previous phone SEs. Mm-hmm. The previous iPhone SEs have been holdovers from an earlier era where you had smaller phones that still had the home button. Well, The SE4 is basically an iPhone 14 with the port changed from Lightning to USB-C.
Yeah.
It's going to be a lot more familiar than the current SEs. I think it's going to be a lot more desirable than the current SEs. And quite frankly, CellCell is, they have, this is just speculation. They're making a, they're basically handicapping what the aftermarket is going to be for these things. Yep. And to be perfectly honest, in a couple years when they start being available used, I think they're going to be more desirable than like the iPhone 11 or XR now.
Yep.
I have another bit to add to this because I can't help it. I think part of this is also CellCell telegraphing that they don't want to pay as much to buy the new iPhone SE in buyback, because this company buys and sells used phones.
Yep, that's it. You hit it right on the nail on the head there. So interesting. A couple comments. If those of you who are listening to us and watching us live, youtube.com/intouchwithiOS. We got some great people in the chat tonight. I see Webb. Thanks for being here, Webb. And Brian and Witherbucket. A couple made some comments there. That's Jill's brother. A couple comments here. Brian says, definitely a model that is worth having to bring people into the Apple ecosystem. Definitely agree with that. And then Brian also said, for us, it's our work-issued phone. So a lot of companies, if they have a work-issued phone, you don't have to have an elaborate iPhone. SE is a perfect model to save some money for the since you're buying quite a few of them. And Witherbucket, he says, I was waiting to look into buying an iPhone until they all went to USB-C, so he's not going to go earlier than the 15 anyway. That makes sense, since 15 is the first model with the USB-C. I wouldn't go backwards at this point if you can. So you wait for the 16 to be out this year, then we'll be the second model into the USB-C connector. So, but again, we went back to MagSafe chargers. Does the port matter much anymore? So you tell us. So definitely interesting. We're going to see where that goes. Also interesting, Apple is now assembling the 6.1-inch iPhone 15 in Brazil. While China is still responsible for manufacturing most of Apple's devices, the company does have some assembly facilities around the world. One of these facilities is the Foxconn Brazil, located in São Paulo. There, Apple is now assembling the 6.1-inch iPhone 15. This was noted in a Brazilian blog for Mac Magazine. Apple seems to be shipping iPhones 15 units assembled in Brazil. Company's not confirmed the news, and nor is there any explicit evidence on Apple's website. However, Apple's online store in Brazil gives customers a clue to which model they're getting. That's probably because it's got a code. And also, I know that Brazil, when you buy technology products, it's just insanely expensive if it isn't made in Brazil. You have to actually, when you buy a product and if it has to be imported from a country other than within Brazil, you pay a premium for it. Because I know firsthand, working with Dell, trying to get laptops in there, and they don't manufacture in Brazil. So people pay a pretty penny for the product. So that does help folks, help Apple get people in Brazil to be buying phones, in my opinion. That's smart. I mean, Brazil's a pretty big country. You know, São Paulo is a very large city. So it's interesting to see where this is. And then Apple is diversifying their assembly chain, and that's smart. You can't be relying on China. We don't know what's going on in China. I mean, I wasn't going to even bring up TikTok with that whole thing going on, but we know that's a bit of a problem in the political world right now. But, you know, why not? Companies should be diversifying their assembly chain. What do you think, Jill, on this?
Oh, I agree. I think they call it friendshoring, where you're now going to find countries we like and that we're friends with, and we're going to start moving manufacturing there. And so I was glad to see it. Brazil's great, and I'm glad to see them becoming involved in it.
How about you, Jeff?
Yes to both of you. So supply chain goes from component, like raw material sourcing, all the way through to customer delivery. And you need to have a resilient supply chain. And China, if that's the sole place to get iPhones out to the rest of the world, That's a very brittle supply chain. All you need is one failure and you're out. So having assembly locations in different parts of the world makes it more resilient, but also makes it easier to get product to areas faster and less expensively because you don't have to ship as far.
Right.
The bonus here is that if you're in Brazil and you're buying an iPhone, that, well, the 6.1-inch iPhone, then it's going to cost you less because you're getting something that's manufactured in the country.
For sure. How about you, Ben?
Well, excuse me. If you remember a few years back when Apple started building phones in India,
yep.
That was initially to comply with Indian import laws. Well, they found out that, you know, not only are they going to make Indian models there, it made sense for them to diversify and make phones at those Foxconn India plants. Well, now they're going to Foxconn Brazil, which I think they're going to eventually diversify again and start making that the regional hub for South America. And do you want to know where Foxconn also makes phones? Well, they just invested $500 million into their Chihuahua, Mexico plant.
Yep.
So you can bet there's going to be iPhones made in North America sooner rather than later.
Yeah. And that would speed up the supply chain too, because it's closer than waiting for it to be shipped from China.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the one thing we found out, whether it be political reasons, pandemic, or just supply chain issues, having all your eggs in one basket is a really bad business decision.
Yep. Yep. It's definitely interesting. No question about it. So let's go on and talk a few more stories here. The Apple sports app. We talked about that. It was we were kind of disappointed to the way it was introduced because there was a lot less features than it really should have had. So, but Apple did do its first update. No surprise here. That's going to support Major League Baseball as well as the NCAA March Madness. As we know, that's going to be a craze coming up here when they get to announce that the teams of 68 in the tournament coming up. So no smart move on their part to get it ready so they can get starting people using this app to look at this. This is version 1.1. The app rolled out and it made some optimizations for all those that I just mentioned. And with baseball season just upon us in 2 weeks from as we record here, opening day is going to be here very soon. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how this app progresses, right? What do you think, Ben?
I mean, Apple's doing exactly what they said they would when they released this app. We're coming up on March Madness, so they're making the app compatible with that. Major League Baseball has opening day in a couple of weeks, so they're opening up for baseball. Right. They're making timed releases to coincide with what sports are available up to the point where in the fall and they add the NFL and whatever else.
Absolutely. What do you think, Jill?
I think it's great. I used to be more of a sports fan than I would followed every game, football, baseball. And I think it's great. I think, you know, having it right there on your phone and being able to see it, makes your iPhone just one more thing where I can just look at this one thing and get everything I want out of it, you know.
And I know, Jeff, you're going to be following Major League Baseball when it comes up, right?
I stay up at night. Like, I've built 3 air tables already just for this. And I expect that the March Madness, because I'm not exactly sure what that is, but I picture people running through the streets, burning things, breaking windows, beating each other up, and yelling about Landru. And yeah.
That's right. The World Cup, that's Jeff. The World
Cup. See, I mix this up all the time. But this doesn't matter to me, but it's important nonetheless. And of course, Apple's going to work to update this. Yeah. And the people that had their panties all in a bunch when version 1 came out, because it didn't have the thing they wanted, give it time. By the time whatever it is that you're interested in for sports rolls around, this will be updated and it'll have your thing in it and it'll be fine.
Yes, it will be fine. Speaking of fine, we really like the VLC media player. That's one, probably one of my favorites when it comes to being able to play pretty much anything in the video format and audio format for that matter. Well, it's potentially coming to the Apple Vision Pro. VideoLAN, which is open source, is working on bringing its popular open source VLC media player to the Apple Vision Pro. And the nonprofit said that it was currently developing a version for Apple's spatial computing headset. We already have a version of VLC running on the Vision Pro. They're just going through some of the paces and testing it. VLC has recently surpassed 5 billion downloads across desktop and mobile platforms. That's crazy. And according to the organization, the cross-platform media player and framework launched 23 years ago. God, it's been that long already. As a student project, and it continues to attract millions of users every year due to its support for like all kinds of crazy codecs, as well as DVDs and audio CDs and everything else. So this is interesting to see where this goes. This is going to be right now on the Mac. It's version 3.0.20. It's available on the iPad as well as on the iPhone too. What do you think, Jeff, on this?
Awesome. Yeah. This is one that I actually do understand and can get excited about. VLC is a killer tool. And seeing the updates is awesome. And the news that it's coming to Vision Pro, I think is fantastic, because that means that Vision Pro users will be able to watch or listen to an even wider range of content. And this is the sort of thing that the big media guys that are dragging their feet should pay attention to, because VLC is there and they're going to take advantage of making content available to Vision Pro users. So, you know, hey, YouTube, Netflix, get on it. Get your native apps out.
For sure. How about you, Ben?
Yeah, it's just one of those apps you expect to be on every platform. The fact that it's coming to Vision OS this quickly, that means it's becoming just a more complete ecosystem every day. Yep,
that is true. And how about you, Jill?
Used VLC back when I had a Windows Media Server. Yeah. And so it's been around forever. Yeah. There's so much, many people who have built VLC around their whole entertainment. So it's great to see. I like to see more of these entertainment, like Jeff was saying, come to Apple Vision Pro, but VLC doing it, it's a great step.
Absolutely.
Good to see they're still around too.
Oh yeah.
Boy, it's been a long
time. For being
an
open source, you know, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. Other interesting item here is the AirPods. The Apple's AirPods Pro could be getting a quote-unquote hearing aid mode later this year. It's been in development for some time, and the AirPods could finally get the FDA label this fall on it. Apple's AirPods Pro are getting closer to being a full-fledged hearing aids and marketed as such. This actually was according to the Bloomberg's Mark Gurman. The move could have a large impact on the hearing aid market, which has already been shaken up in recent years with the over-the-counter models, because now you don't need a prescription to get hearing aids anymore. And Gurman did write saying that the AirPods Pro are due to receive a hearing aid function as part of iOS 18, which will arrive in the fall. And of course, we'll expect that to be announced at WWDC in June. They had reported this in the fall of 2021 that Apple was working towards a future AirPods model that would have as a function. It's not clear whether or not the hearing aid function is going to be available only in new models or would it be offered as a software update. So they're still working on that. But still, I think this is a great thing, you know, with AirPods, that they had they had that speaker mode where you could set the AirPods down and be able to hear it on your phone. So they've already got some functionality when it comes to that. What do you think, Jill, on this?
Oh, I think it's great. First of all, my hearing is terrible, so I assume that this is going to come my way. And would I like to look cool wearing AirPods instead of a hearing aid? But I know people with hearing aids, and they say that it's annoying, it's frustrating. And if this could become something that is much easier for people to use and much better sound quality and not have the frustration people have with hearing aids, I think this is great. Yeah. I'm excited to see how this turns out.
Yep. How about you, Ben?
I mean, hearing aids have that kind of aura of inaccessibility about them. You have to go to the doctor, blah, 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 blah. Well, AirPods and their associated Beats cousins pretty much have the technology to be able to measure the sound that you need, be programmable, and oh yeah, we already have them in our ears most of the time.
True.
It's making these be able to enhance a person's life just makes sense.
Sure does.
So you could wreck your hearing and then repair it all on the same device.
Exactly.
There you go. There you go. How about you? Last word on this, Jeff.
This is no surprise at all. This is another case of Apple telegraphing where they were going. And considering the complaints that my friends who use hearing aids have with using them with their smartphone, someone needs to make this better because the hearing aid companies aren't opening up the door with OTC hearing aids. Set all of this up, and even the first gen AirPods Pro, as I recall, met pretty much all the standards for FDA approval. So yeah, do it and give people more options. And can you imagine having AirPods Pro as an insurance medical expense?
That would be awesome.
We live in amazing times.
We do. I do. A couple comments in the chat about this. Witherbucket says, I'm sure I've damaged my hearing too, but may need them as well eventually. So yeah, somebody, this could be something, you got the bonus. Not only is it a hearing aid to hear things, it's also an earbud or earphone to be able to listen as well. So
it's a salad dressing and a floor wax.
It is all in one. Next story here, Google Chrome is now gaining real-time URL protection for both Mac and iOS. Google announced this today as we record this, as it's upgrading the Google Safe Browsing with the real-time URL protection to keep Chrome users safe from malicious websites. Safe browsing is designed to protect against phishing attacks, malware, and unwanted software by checking URLs against a master list. The standard protection for Chrome previously used a list that was stored on a device and updated every 30 to 60 minutes. But now websites will be checked against Google's server side of things instead for known bad sites in real time. And Google says it expects to block about 25% of more phishing attempts than with the change. It's good to see. Good to see they're also doing it on iOS. They also recently added their password checking for iOS devices in there as well. So good to see some more security things. Not everybody's a huge fan of Chrome, but I know, I think I see Google striving towards, you know, making it a better experience. What do you think, Jeff?
Oh, Google. Okay. First, I'm all totally on board for having better protection for users out on the web. That's great. The problem that I'm having with this is the thing where, I mean, Google's already tracking everything you do online, especially if you're using Chrome. But now every single URL that you enter is in real time being sent off to Google servers and logged. Yes, they were getting the information already, but wow, this just suddenly seems a lot more invasive. So the question I have is the even more eroded privacy worth it for the protection that this will offer? And I'm just tossing that out there because for some people, the answer will be yes, and some people it'll be no. Yep. I'm super critical tonight, aren't I?
You're giving some good stuff. How about you, Joel?
Well, it's exactly it. I'm glad I'm doing it. I'm glad more security is better. But again, it's like hiring the fox to guard your hen house. That's great, good. But who's going to protect you from the guard? So
yep,
they steal everything. And I just don't, you know. There has to be more involved with protection from Google than just this.
Yeah. How about you on last word on this, Ben?
I mean, if you're using Google software, which Chrome has replaced Internet Explorer as the number one browser on the planet.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Did you just call it Internet Exploder?
Exploder? Oh, he did. I didn't hear that part. Nice one.
Oh, Ben, yep. You rock.
But when you're dealing with Google, you expect that they will be taking their payment through your data. If you're willing to make that sacrifice and pay that price, the fact that they are looking to make it safer is definitely a good thing.
Yep. So it's definitely going to be interesting. There's no question about it. Last story this week, Apple says that iPhone driver's license will expand in these states, but it's been 2 years. Well, come on, what's up with this? In just 4 states in the United States, residents can have their driver's license or ID through the Apple Wallet app in the iPhone and Apple and the Apple Watch. Jeff is the only person here that can do that, and providing a convenient way and contactless way of displaying proof of identity at our age at select airports, businesses, and venues. Right now, it's Arizona, Maryland, Colorado, and Georgia. And no one has done anything since almost a year ago. The last state was Georgia. There's committed states, which was in March of 2022, that are still going to do it, but they still haven't put their infrastructure in place. That would be Connecticut, Hawaii, Iowa, Kentucky, Mississippi, Ohio, Oklahoma, and Utah. And they said they would also be supported in Puerto Rico. Again, they've been in discussions with these states for 2 years, and I know why the problem is. I mean, I think we all know it. The states are just so slow of reacting to technology. They don't want to have to do some updates. You know, they had to update for Real ID. Like in Illinois, where I live, you know, you had to upgrade your driver's license to have the Real ID and fill out some more questions to agree to, so you can continue to use it when you fly instead of a passport. But they can't get this in place. What do you think, Jeff?
I have a real problem with this article.
Okay.
Fundamentally. Okay, here's the deal. This article is completely coming in from the wrong angle, and it should have a headline that says, these states committed to supporting Apple ID more than 2 years ago and still haven't done it. This isn't about Apple at all. This, and Dave, you hit it when you said that we know what's going on. These states are slow to move. The fact that we have 4 states on board already, that means those 4 states moved really fast. And yeah, as soon as I could set this up, I did, because of course I did. And then immediately found out that it's completely worthless. Because it's not just about the state saying, we now support this, set up your digital ID on your iPhone. Mm-hmm. It's about all the jurisdictions in the state having the infrastructure to support this.
Yep.
So in Colorado, I still have to carry my physical ID everywhere I go, because there's, I want to say, 5 cities in the state that will accept my digital ID as proof of my driver's license, like if I were to have a traffic stop, and so I can't use it in that sense. Yeah. If I go into businesses that the state says this is a valid ID, most of them will refuse to see this as a valid ID because they don't understand what it is. And like if I go into a liquor store when I get carded, because everyone better get carded when they go to the liquor store, even though the state says I can show this to be valid ID. Or if I go into a dispensary, yep, Same thing. Not going to happen. I have to show the physical ID. Then I learned the hard way that when you go to airports that support where TSA supports this, even though it's on the TSA website, doesn't mean they're actually supporting it. So Denver International Airport has been listed as supporting this for TSA checkpoints for quite a while. They didn't actually start supporting this until just a few months ago. Yeah. So anyhow, yeah, this isn't a fair article, and I don't think it was written to show what's actually going on. Come on, you guys can do better than this.
That's why I have you here, Jeff, to clear the way of all this poor writing in some of these articles.
Just so I can get up on a soapbox. But you know, this is only fair because I push check joiners buttons just to push them. And this is karma. Yeah, so you can go ahead and keep pushing those buttons for me and I will react appropriately.
Okay. It was unintentional. Ben, what do you think?
Look, the state of Iowa has been committed to digital IDs of various forms since I was with GeekBeat. That's close to 10 years now with nothing to show. Yeah. I'm trying to say this in a way that doesn't sound political, but it seems like a lot of places are more interested in politics than implementation for citizens. This is probably something that should be done to help way of life, but I mean, nobody wants to do it.
Yep. It's sad.
And yeah, until we actually start thinking about things in terms of, hey, this should be done rather than polling results, I don't think this is going to change much in the near future. Yep.
All right, Jill, you get the final word for this.
Well, my state's not even on the list, so we're not Nor even is talking mine. About it.
You and I are both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. But I think this reminds me a lot of the contact tracing app that Google and Apple worked on together. And, it, you know, no one ever implemented it in time for it to do any good because they just dragged their feet. Then some states created their own thing and it was not secure and it didn't work. States would benefit greatly if they would start to get involved in technology, and they're not, and they're not doing it. And it hurts the citizens and it hurts them because I think eventually there are some benefits to be had for it. So.
Right.
Mistake.
I think so too. With that, we're way over time, but this was some great conversations, some great topics, and I'm so glad that you're all here this week. So let's go ahead and wrap up. That's a wrap for this week. Please send your comments, questions, and suggestions to our email address, which is feedback@intouchwithios.com. You can follow us on Mastodon at intouchwithios at techhangout.social. Support the show by buying me a coffee at intouchwithios.com/coffee. We would really appreciate it. You can become a patron of the show by going to patreon.com/intouchwithios. We have two tiers available to support the show. We would really appreciate it. Make sure you like, share, and subscribe so you are notified when we are live streaming, which is on Thursday nights at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 5 p.m. Pacific, on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/intouchwithios. I thank you to Brian F. and Webb and Witherbucket, and I also saw Guy Cerro in the chat. Thank you for being here as well. So great to have everybody that comes into our chat on YouTube. We also, when you subscribe, you're also going to be able to notify when we're live streaming, and you're also going to be able to go watch the live streams, and the recorded live stream, and past shows. Visit In Touch with iOS Magazine on Flipboard, where many of the topics we discuss are flipped into that magazine. The link is in our show notes. You can subscribe to the show in your favorite podcatcher, including the Pocket Casts, Overcast, Apple Podcasts with transcripts, and many others. But better yet, go to our website, which is intouchwithios.com, where all the links to all the ways to listen to us are on our website. I am Dave Ginsberg, and you can find me on Mastodon at DaveG65 at mastodon.cloud. Jill McKinley, thank you so much for being here. Where can people find you?
Well, I just started a new podcast, Buzz Blossom and Squeak. Nice. So you can find me there. It's about nature and getting outdoors and enjoying and appreciating it. But my main site is abetterlifeinsmallsteps.com. That's where you can find everything.
Great. Thank you for being here. And Ben Ray, thank you for being here as always. Where can people find you?
Well, Dave, you can find me at Ben Raythig on your social media of choice. Raythig.tech for my writings. On Tuesday evenings, you can find me on Mac Voices Live with Chuck Joyner. On Thursdays, you can find me on The Big Show on the British Tech Network when I don't have a migraine. And Friday, you can find me on The Mac Show on the British Tech Network. As always, you can find me here every Thursday night on In Touch of iOS with our host, Dave Ginsberg.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate that. And last but not least, Jeff Gamet, always a pleasure having you here. Where can people find you?
Well, Dave, thank you for being so tolerant when I soapbox.
What makes the show great.
I'm glad I bring value. All right. So social media, I'm Jay Gamet, and I am active on Mastodon, Instagram, and Threads right now. Then for shows, this is going to sound really familiar. Tuesday evenings on Chuck Joyner's Mac Voices Live. Here on Thursday evenings, Dave Ginsberg's In Touch with iOS. Then on the British Tech Network, Thursdays, The Big Show. Fridays, The Mac Show. And here's the deviation. Brian Chaffin and I also do The Context Machine.
That's right. Thank you, Jeff. And thank you, everybody, for listening. We really enjoyed doing the show. And we hope you enjoyed it. And until next time, we'll talk again soon.